You know, I will say, now that we've kind of moved to the less frequent recording schedule, it does allow me to miss you a little bit more.
Aw, buddy. So,
yeah. Aww. Yeah. I was growing to resent you, Jacob. It was secret. I hid it really well, but I was...
You're saying that we needed this break in order for you to appreciate what an amazing partner you actually had?
I mean, sounds like you're kind of putting words in my mouth, but if that's what you need to...
Welcome to the Voyage Podcast, a show that traverses the oceans of myth and legend through the lens of Catholic theology and philosophy. Come aboard as we set sail in pursuit of the heroic life and Christian virtue with your hosts, Mike Schramm and Jacob Platty.
Well, I mean, I know we kind of talked about this separately. I was surprised that this was not like you weren't just ready for this one at the drop of a hat. I thought you were going to be like a huge Avatar Airbender fan.
Wouldn't you think? You know, yeah. I was in...
That's your vibe. That's definitely your vibe.
It seems like it should be. I was at the tail end of high school, leaving to join the military, right when this was peaking its popularity. And I was too busy off, post 9/11 military.
Saving the world or perpetuating military complex.
No, now I feel obligated to say that I never deployed. I don't even want people who know me will be like, he's trying to make, stolen valor claims. I actually never even deployed. I did join the military and I was in the military, but the fate had it that I stayed stateside. So I'm not taking any world saving cred. I'll say this much. One of the things that's been interesting to me is how we're inadvertently into another kind of like thematic kick. It's like we as a podcast fall into these rhyming episodes of like, we're still dealing with Eastern culture and we're still dealing with, I'm going to call this like faux anime, phone-a-may.
That's good. Yeah.
Phone-a-may. I'm going to anger so many people. I think, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I have just so little overlap with Avatar in my life that I have no idea if what I'm saying is even offensive.
It was a fun, what would you say? Rapid deep dive that we both got to experience with the release, and we haven't really even, we sort of just jumped in. Welcome everybody to this episode of the Voyage Podcast. Where we're going to be, which, and I will say, I didn't want this to be, I don't want this to be a, like, we only cover one, like, it's supposed to be more kind of conceptual, and then we'll start to bring in, examples of, well, in this TV show, you see this, or in this movie, you see this. It's not just going to be like, we're not like reviewing Avatar The Last Airbender, whether it's the original Nickelodeon conception of it, or the more recent Netflix one that just released. It's not just a straight up review, or at least I don't want it to be.
What Mike wants it to be is just like, what's an excuse for me to talk about the four temperaments? Hey, that Avatar show does something with the number four, right? Like, okay, well, yeah, we'll just roll with that.
That's what the show has always been, just an excuse for me to talk about concepts in theology, spiritual direction, whatever, which the four temperaments happen to be, Jacob.
I'm trying to use this show to genuinely find Christ in the world at large. I don't have some egotistical motive to just soapbox about things.
You're already
like
nice try, but you're already on a podcast, so that's nobody's buying that.
Only because interestingly, you keep having me back.
Well, I say interestingly for my own sake. The show is Avatar The Last Airbender, the Netflix live action that we both were able to kind of jump through. Eight episodes in season one.
I was going to say, you said we did an impromptu deep dive, and it's like, well, if by deep dive you mean I watched the Netflix TV show.
Cursory glance, yeah.
then yes, I totally dove deep into Avatar: The Last Airbender.
That's the buzzwords, though.
I bent my will to watching Avatar. Hey, let me say something. I want to do a little bit of reviewing, frankly. And I'll just continue to irritate and annoy like the super dedicated loyal fan base of this TV show, because that's the thing is like this is one of those shows that people just love. Okay, this is like Clone Wars. People love Clone Wars, right? The cartoon TV show or whatever. Which I've actually watched a more of that than I have of Avatar by this point. I kind of see what's happening there. Avatar, I've tried watching the cartoon like three times.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. Like
you're walking the plank right now.
I missed this one. Yeah. Well, hey, prove me wrong, kid.
This is why, Jacob, I'm desperately trying to say this is not an Avatar review because we're so underqualified. It's because that's why this is a Four Temperaments that also happens to recognize some very strong thematic parallels to the TV show Avatar. How's that? Is that a fair compromise?
Is one of those temperaments about like having the proper like attitude towards like not making your audience angry? One second, my dog.
I was gonna say, are you? You got a cooking class going on in the background.
All right, you can hear that. I gotta fix that. It's my dog. 100%. Ring in his dinner bell. Yeah. Okay. One moment. Okay. So
you're like Sokka complaining about Momo. There you go.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I am Sokka complaining about Momo.
See how natural that felt? You just
that
like
felt
you,
super.
You flowed into it like water. It flowed like water. we'll do a very kind of broad sweep of the, and what's nice about, I mean, the Netflix series, which, you know, I don't know if it's because of the, if you want to chalk it up to the loyalty to the original Nickelodeon cartoon show. But there's been it's been a little polarizing, I've noticed. I mean, I've done a little bit of like, what's the response been in terms of do people like the new Netflix show or not? We'll do a broad overview of season one, which was sort of it's in itself, the eight episodes was sort of a very kind of like, it's like if you took the animated season one and sort of condensed it.
You want to know what I think is the funniest criticism? Because I as well have been like, I wonder what people are saying about this show. And it's, you know, some kind of review surfing, right? Some review bending, as I like to call it now.
You do like to call it that, yeah.
And there's been a lot of this kind of like, kind of more criticism than I anticipated. I am someone who, frankly, has not been able to get into the cartoon. And I was able to get into the TV show way more. I think that here's the funny criticism that I keep hearing is people keep referencing the fact that this covers season one. And they're all like, they just tried to cram too much material into a mere eight episodes. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, season one was 20 minute episodes. And this Netflix show is eight. They're at least an hour, I think. I don't even think that. Well, no, I guess maybe
about 50 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's basically no.
This is very similar amount of time, but you know,
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean they tried to cram too much? And it's basically the same story.
And I'll say
it's basically the same amount of time used to tell it. Like, what are you talking about?
We said this off. You know, camera or whatever, too, that it's kind of trimming the fat a little bit, which,
absolutely.
Again, that sounds almost like blasphemous
one of the reasons,
to say.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why, like, it's kind of slow, folks. Sorry. Hey, I'm sorry.
Boy.
Avatar, it's a great kids show, and I like kids shows, so normally I don't use that as a kind of, like, pejorative, this one.
This is also this is more the generational shift from those like early 2000s where you were still doing the like every single week for almost a full year where you had to get like a 20 episode, you know, obviously break for Thanksgiving, Christmas, stuff like that. Whereas now, just the movement towards just emphasizing the kind of the cable season of TV shows plus the streaming movement to streaming, you have a lot shorter seasons. But this is every show where you're not going to have a 25 episode season, but it does, it cuts out a lot of the, you know, what are called filler episodes.
It seems to do a pretty clever job of mixing and matching elements from episodes. So I have not seen the entirety of season one of the actual animated show. I did watch the entirety of the Netflix live action. So by the time you got to the end of the live action, we were handling elements that I had not been exposed to within the animation. But from what I had remembered from the animation, and I remembered quite a bit of it, it's like, oh yeah, I see what they're doing here. And I see how they've cleverly used that episode element and stuck it over here. I thought they did a pretty good job.
And I keep teasing this. Can you go ahead and just sort of walk us through a little bit of season one? And I'll interject at various points. I mean, I guess I'm kind of saying spoiler alert, but I assume that for the most part, either you're familiar with the animated show or the Netflix show, where you kind of know the broad story arc of season one.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say that they seem to have been very faithful to the animated show. So yeah, if you're familiar with the animated show, at the very least, you have a really good idea of what this TV show does.
But you have two brother and sister, Sokka and Katara. We find out, and this comes up right in the introduction, especially if you watch the animated show, that there's this sort of prophecy, or there was this story 100 years ago, the Fire Nation. So there's four nations, fire, water, earth, and air. Fire was trying to kind of take over the world, but every lifespan, every life cycle, you have one member who's supposed to kind of bring peace and harmony to the four nations, and that's the Avatar. The Avatar was in the Air Nation. The Fire Nation was trying to, they basically committed genocide against the Air Nation,
did. That's the other thing. People are like, oh, the TV show is too dark or whatever. It's like, this is about genocide. The Fire Nation's basically like the Nazis, and they're basically just wiping out everybody. And the basic premise is that they're going to bring peace by controlling the world.
Evil Empire, like, too. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the Galactic Empire. But it's not that dark. Even with all that dark, I think that it actually,
I mean, where people being burned alive is like kind of
it is
scary.
but where I think that's, you know, maybe because, hey, I'm a 38 year old man. So maybe I just found that more like kind of like
you've engaging. Seen some things.
Yeah, I've seen some.
Yeah, things. You're desensitized, so you have
me,
to.
Well, it
you know,
kept
you were
me, like the stakes
you were
felt
upset
very real. Yeah.
That well, and the thing too is like I imagine that the live action was made for people who did kind of grow up with the animated series, and so they would be in their, you know, at like the least late 20s,
they're the ones,
if not 30s.
They're the ones complaining about it though. They're like, oh, it's not as lighthearted as the animated one, and it's like, I mean, it's still pretty lighthearted. Even though it's handling all this really heavy stuff, and it's got like heavy stuff. Sorry, I'll take over because you suck at telling these synopses. Yeah. So you got the sassy Fire Nation, and you can tell they're sassy because they're like the fire people, right? And those sassy fire people are going to go and like control everybody else. They're just angry. It's like that. It's like that Pixar movie Inside Out. You can tell who's who, like the water people. They're like super, like go with the flow, you know.
I think you're thinking of Elemental, but anyway. But
Inside
anyway,
Out has the fire guy, the angry fire guy. You're
sure,
right.
I guess.
Like
yeah,
that. Yeah.
I don't think there's a water guy in the Emotions movie, but.
Okay. So anyway, I did like how the live action uses actual nations. That are correlated with like real life nations. So, and I probably should look this up before I start making like accidental racist statements or something like that. But I don't think I'm going to. I'm pretty sure that the Fire Nation is
last words.
All right. Nothing ever bad came out of anyone's mouth after saying the words I just said.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that the Fire Nation, it seems to me as a ignorant Westerner, that they look like they're very much like based off the Chinese culture, right? The Earth Nation is very much based off the Indian culture, continental Indian culture. The Water Nations look like they're rooted in like Inuit you know, that area of the globe. Because I kind of thought they might be kind of like more Tibetan or something like that, like Nepalese or something. But looks like they're more like Inuit, you know, like top of the world, bottom of the world stuff. And then which one am I missing? Oh, the airbenders. Air. They look like they're South Asia, like South Seas Asian, like Thailand and things like that. I think that I'm pretty sure that's accurate. I think that I'm not making that up. And I thought that was super cool. I thought that was neat that it really adds a sense of authenticity and reality to this world that they're invoking these different real world corollaries in Asian cultures that
well, it's respecting. Yeah. It's respecting the geography of whether it's made up, you know, fake geography or, you know, real world geography. Cause, check it off the bingo card. You know, you see similar points when people are talking about Middle Earth or in Westeros, right? Where the geography is obviously an important part of the story too. So, but as you were saying,
yeah. All right. So the Sassy Fire Nation is going to take over the world, and they do so by wiping out the airbenders to begin with. And they're systematically trying to either wipe out or subjugate the other major nations. So you got the fire, the water, the air, and the earth, right? And Aang is the main character. He is going to be the new avatar. Most of this story is very much inspired by Buddhist religious thought, frankly. It's all about reincarnation, avatar. Well, avatars themselves, that comes more out of Hinduism. But Hinduism would say that the Buddha is actually an avatar of, you know, depends upon what tradition of Hinduism you're talking about. But they fold the Buddha into being this avatar character. And so we can talk a little bit about what an avatar is within the real world religious context. In the context of this TV show, though, he is a messiah figure. He is the one that brings balance to the force, if you will, the balance to the four forces, the four elements. Yeah. And when Aang, the new avatar, he accidentally gets Captain America in ice. Basically, Avatar just steals everything from everybody. That's what I'm realizing the more I describe this show. But he gets Captain America in ice for 100 years and disappears. Well, and so without the balance in the world.
Just to interject, this will become a major point in the story is that, you know, the live action sort of makes it seem like it was not totally brought on by him. Like it was sort of like
the Fire Nation thing, began
whereas
first.
Yeah. You sometimes, I mean, people, it's sort of thrown in Aang's face throughout season one that it was done as a sort of avoiding of his, you know, call, his vocation. And that's why, that's like brilliant. I said, this whole season or this whole show is all about vocation, not just for Aang, which, like I said, this is one of the big arcs of the show is him going in ice for 100 years, sort of like, what would you say? Like not saying no to his call, but saying not yet to the call. Like he's not ready to answer that call.
Well, he certainly, he acts it. Right. So like he, and it's a little different from the animated show, right? In the animated show, you discover more about why he disappeared for 100 years, how he ended up in the ice and things like that.
It makes it seem less his fault, whereas...
Well, but here's what I'll say. It's still the case in the live-action TV show where when he's informed that he's the Avatar, so it's his responsibility to learn how to bend all four elements and not just be an airbender, and he has to leave home. He has to travel the world to all these different masters and the different elements.
He has to be that bridge builder or that pontifex. Right?
And he's
got to throw
a 12-year-old.
Theological language. Yeah. Nice. It's a burden.
Yes. Well, and he's a 12-year-old kid and he doesn't want that burden. And so he kind of runs away to collect his thoughts. And in so doing, falls into the ocean and gets captured in ice. Right. So the impression isn't that he necessarily planned on going away for 100 years. Yeah. But it is his refusal of the call to reference another thing where I was talking
Joseph
about
Joseph Campbell.
Show.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. That causes him to fall into this ice trap, so to speak. Right? And because of that, he's not around to inspire the other nations. The Fire Nation becomes like really powerful. And 100 years later, you have these the earth and the water, the airbenders get genocided. They're straight wiped out, so Aang's the only one left.
Become the last airbender.
You might even say he's the last one. That's right.
Yeah.
I just now got that reference.
No, oh no! Come on.
Yeah. I get it.
Moving
so,
on.
So anyway, but they're on their back feet. The Fire Nation has gone a long way towards using its sass against everyone else. And
and you get this industrial like complex too, right? Because they're the ones they're the ones the smoke is coming out of the ship, right? They're the ones, whereas the Water Nation are riding canoes and they have this,
I believe
like, war
they're
machine.
Just going with the flow, Mike. Is what I said.
Yeah,
just going with the flow. Sure. so they're up there being Inuit, right? Like they're up in the frozen Arctic hunting seals and making jerky out of them and things like that. The airbenders looked very Tibetan Buddhist, frankly, like, and so they had that kind of peace vibe going on.
Well, the architecture too. Yeah.
Yeah. And the, everything about it. Very cool, by the way, honestly, the live action show, I think looks amazing.
Spared no expense. And you could tell. Yeah.
You could tell. Yeah. I thought this was a perfectly entertaining show, a great show to watch with the family. I mean, pretty heavy material. So think about it with some of the younger kids, I guess. But like, I don't really get the amount of vitriol this show is getting. I guess it's just because it's so beloved in its animated form that people are going to hate. Mm. But I thought they did a fine job on this show. You have kids acting. And so, you know, some people are going to like poke fun at kids for being bad actors or something like that. But I think that's unfair. I think these kids did fine. They did fine. Mm. They're good. Good job. Actors,
they were really looking for that validation.
Yeah, you know, at least someone's got your back.
Someone will come across this and
send it to them.
So, going back to this is like the first scene that we see. We get a little bit more of like what would be considered a flashback in the animated show, where you go back into the Air Nation and him kind of running away or refusing the call, like you said. Opening scene in the animated show is it's Sokka and Katara, two Water Nation siblings, and they come across him in the ice. So this is already 100 years after, you know, that initial destruction of the Air Nation. And so he's released from the ice, and that begins kind of this, you know, this sort of hero's journey of season one. And so
very
it's basically
so. Yeah.
And we realize pretty much he's the Avatar by the end of episode one. And so the whole season is not a secret. Yeah. And
it's not a secret that he's the last one, and it's not a secret that he's the Avatar.
Yeah. That's, and,
they spell that out pretty good.
And, so it's really not even about uncovering any sort of mystery. It's more about him growing into the Avatar that he was always meant to be. Right. Growing
and he has to go find the embodiments of previous avatars, because this is very reincarnation based mythology, and learn skills and get guidance from all these prior incarnations of himself, right? So he's basically the Dalai Lama, right? Within this context. And that's what he meets many, you know, three, I'm pretty sure, of his prior incarnations within this. And they are not what you would expect, actually. They give him kind of different advice. They give him advice that doesn't always sound like super therapeutic, I would say.
It's very foreboding, like pretty much all of it is.
Most of it's kind of a bummer.
Well, and again, you know, you were saying how this is like, it's taken from Star Wars, taken from Captain America, whatever. It's very much it's kind of his Luke Skywalker when he's with Yoda, where it's like, stuck between his destiny or his vocation and his friends. And that's one of Aang's big things.
Though, let me just point something out to you. Please. When Luke Skywalker goes to save his friends, or puts his friendship in front of his, like, you know, mastering of the Force, it's a mistake, and it's a terrible mistake. In this show, this is the type of show... Yeah, it's the right thing to do. I just want to point out that as much as this show seems rooted in trying to, like, shine a light and be respectful of Asian cultures, they took the cultural trappings of the heritage that gave us people like Confucius with his proper social orders and extreme, you know, attention to hierarchy, or the population that gave us the caste system and their extreme appreciation for, you know, proper social order and things like that. And this show is entire message is you gotta write your own story, man.
Hey, there's some of us less cynically minded, Jacob. Some of us see this as the subservience of obedience to charity. So that's just kind of how that's what would.
You would. That's how you would take this. You know, this
is, some of us, you know, some of us,
another show of teaching some of us, me
some of us, to, Water back. Nation, you know, peace-minded people want to reconcile all of these disparate ideas together. So
I'm just glad this show could finally explain to me that women can be warriors too. And I think it was brave of them to put that message out in 2024. Kudos to you, Avatar, The Last Airbender. but, you know, hey, she can totally waterbend super good. Katara, she's such a good waterbender that even though she just started, she was able to take out Zuko. What's his name? Zuko? Is that the, yeah, Zuko.
You think of the fire?
The fire guy who's been training his entire life to master fire bending.
He's kind of the.
Beats him in the first. First fight.
He's definitely the Kylo Ren if we're kind of keeping the whole Star Wars thing.
Because
he's the emo like bad guy who, I mean, I don't know, like you said, you haven't finished season one, so you haven't seen any of two and three, but he's definitely got some even more Kylo Ren vibes as he goes through seasons two and three.
You can kind of tell what they're doing with that Zuko kid. I think they do a good job making him sympathetic in the live action. You know, in the animated one, you didn't get enough backstory by the end of season one. So I haven't seen past that. So he's still basically just kind of a jerk in season one of the animated show. But season one of the live action TV show gives you a lot more backstory up front. And he is much more sympathetic, much more Kylo Ren-sher.
You know, he's another good example of the because he's honor bound. He's very like obedient and dutiful as a son, fulfilling this 3-year long mission, which is basically a snipe hunt by his dad to go find the Avatar. But we do find
reference. Man, this should be a Pixar.
The snipe hunt. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's precedes Pixar. But yeah. Anyway,
oh, I know. I'm just saying.
But he's another good example of this. You know, obedience is subject to charity, and his sense of charity, right, wins out over his sense of honor, which is sort of a subversion of what you'd kind of expect when it comes to a property like this.
Sure.
So I'm going to die on this hill, Jacob. I'm going to die on this.
You will die on that hill.
I'm going to die on this, this mountain, this earth. Yeah. Earth Nation.
Oh,
mountain.
Earth Nation mountain. So anyway, all right, interesting thing happened within the context of the show in the sense that like he journeys around, he meets the avatars, he enters the spirit world. There's an episode called Spirited Away, Spirited Away, this is something that never came up in our previous conversations. That's actually almost kind of like a genre of storytelling, which is when it was used for the movie Spirited Away. It's actually, it'd be like calling a show fairy tale.
It's like a tip of the cap. Like yeah. Like, yeah. Or like into really the woods, like the like musical Into the Woods, like the musical Into the Woods, you know,
Once
it's like,
upon
okay.
a time or something yeah. like that.
That was a TV show too.
Yeah. I actually watched a handful of those seasons. So anyway, the fact that they're using that title again in this show, it's because it's actually kind of like a
tip of the cap. Yeah. It's a,
okay. Yeah. A bending of the.
It was the ceremonial bow.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I wasn't even trying to be cute. I was just saying, like, it's the tip of the cap. So.
Sure. Anyway, they play in the spirit world for a while, and he turns into a giant kaiju monster at the end.
That's a bottle episode for sure.
This is a very. They're using a lot of Asian tropes.
They're getting them all in one. Yeah,
they're just
like
getting them all
in one season. Yeah,
they do interesting things with like their notion of spirit, though, in this show. And I think it's let's get into what you want to talk about, Mike. You want to talk about
please,
some like
it's about
temperament
time.
Stuff.
Well, okay. So, well, before we do that, we have to do a little bit of So one of the things I've already mentioned before we kind of went into our synopsis is everything about this show. Not just Aang himself, but like is ordered towards vocations, especially with our main characters. So, you know, we have Katara who, she has this letter from grandma with the scroll telling her to become who she was meant to be. So it's like that language is very much like, you know, destiny, vocations, and she's obviously like struggling with it. And part of it is, you know, you can roll your eyes about it, but you could say it's kind of societal or, you know, systemic.
Keeping her in the kitchen.
Yeah. And,
keeping her weaving
which
baskets.
I mean, there are, you know, there's a little bit of a back and forth between her and her brother, because her brother has had this thrust upon him too, this responsibility or this call thrust upon him because of the disappearance, the death of the mom, and then the disappearance of the dad.
And you know what, Mike? Not all men are meant to be warriors, and not all women are meant to be healers. Okay. Women can be warriors, and sometimes men aren't meant to be warriors. All right. This show taught me that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Jordan Peterson. So, I mean, we have, you know, we have the line, and I tried to keep, like, you know, just put down quotes from various episodes, but like whenever you have somebody say, "It's my destiny," I mean, it's right on the nose for you. You already mentioned how he has to commune with past avatars to realize his powers, right? To become who he was meant to be, or, remember who he is. That's Lion King language. Not only is he like communing with these kind of people from the past, or what we would call tradition, but he's having to confront his mistakes, right? The mistakes of his past, which is sort of like keeping him from fulfilling that mission too, right? Like,
as embodied by prior avatars, is that what you're kind of saying? Like, he has to confront the mistakes of his past because, like,
well, I just mean whether it's his. You remember his friend who is like over 100 years old,
oh,
but he's
sure.
The king of the
Boomy.
The Earth Nation. He's very much hurt by it, right? You've got that emotional, but then he himself, Aang, is carrying this like, well, I let my friend die. Remember his teacher, right? His mentor figure, Joseph Campbell language, is his mentor figure who he feels responsible for his death, even though we all know as the audience, you know, there's nothing he could have done, but of course, sure. That's the Spirited Away episode. He has to really confront that too.
Yep.
And then, yeah, the past avatars are all saying, like, you know, you left it. Now you have to kind of pick up the pieces and kind of fix what you broke or let break. Which there again is like, when it comes to Christian vocations, you know, one of the big steps to discovering your own vocation of what am I supposed to do in the future is you have to look back and kind of introspect and look back at your past. Where is there need to be healing? That's why one of the biggest steps when it comes to discovering a vocation is first reconciliation. It's first confession, because that's where the spiritual healing starts. Then you can start to look forward, right?
Sure.
If you try to walk forward and, you know, but you're carrying all this baggage, you're not going to move as quickly or not move at all. And so that's one of the, you know, big things for Aang. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No, it's interesting because, you know, and because I thought in the first you were talking about like, he has to, because by the end of the show, all the avatars that he communes with are basically saying this is the path of the avatar is a lonely path. Path of the Jedi is a lonely path.
He walks
right?
a lonely like, road, the only yeah, road that he has ever known.
That's they're telling him, you know, it's a sad song. And you know, he's just going to get the people he loves hurt. And so everyone just keeps telling him you can't do this, but every time he overcomes an obstacle or everything that happens in the context of the show that propels him forward towards a positive outcome is ultimately rooted in his relationship to his friends, mm-hmm. whether it's them saving him or him saving them, right? And so oftentimes there's numerous times in the context of the show where it's explicitly the case where it's like, my friends are my strength. Without my friends, I am not capable of doing this. I cannot do this alone, kind of thing. And so that by the end of the show is like, you can't necessarily assume that the way the avatars have done this in the past is the thing that's going to fix the world now, right? Now, this is going to contradict, I think, some of where you were going with your outline, but it doesn't negate what you're saying with your outline. I think the themes that are in there are still real. It's just textually speaking within the context of the show, because the avatars.
I'll bring it all together in spite of what you say, Jacob. So
okay,
that's okay.
All right. But like, it's ironic and interesting that the quote unquote bad advice that he's getting from the other avatars are actually his advice because he is the reincarnation of these avatars. Mm. And I know that doesn't mean they're the same person. And the show even says, hey, we're not the same person. But I mean, it's clearly inspired from Buddhist, religious ideas and things like that. And so you are shaped by your past life within that
and
context.
I will, just to throw in something really quick, you know, there's this line, and I'm going to forget, I think it's Galatians, where St. Paul says, it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And no one's arguing for, and no Catholic biblical scholar, no Orthodox biblical scholar is saying, oh, St. Paul was possessed by Jesus, was possessed by Christ, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
Nobody's saying that he lost his identity or lost his agency and that his body was just taken over. He was still Paul, but you know, Christ was very much so much alive in him that people couldn't see the difference. And that's what we would say about any of the saints, St. Francis of Assisi. He's considered, G.K. Chesterton writes this in his biography of St. Francis, that it's like, he looked so much like Christ. And this is where the whole stigmata idea in Catholic spirituality comes from, where it's like the saint emulates or reflects Christ so much in his or her life that they actually reflect it in Christ's death. And that's why they have the wounds of the cross, of the marks in his hands and his feet and his side or even his head.
Oh, that's
and so it's this, it's almost supposed to be like a physical manifestation of the spiritual reality that you imitate Christ so much that you even do at his greatest moment, right? The moment of the most grace. And so we would say something similar with Aang when he is quote unquote possessed by these avatars, right? Because even in that one scene, and I can't remember her name, but the one Earth.
Yurio? Start with a K, right?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the, she was
with the fans where he fights, where he fights off
Earth?
The Fire Nation.
She was Earth, I guess. Yeah.
She was.
Okay.
But anyway, like, he like it looks like her, like the one chiefess woman, she sees her and like, oh, she's back, like she's, you know, is this Elijah back from the dead or John the Baptist back from the dead?
Exactly,
it's very much that, right? But then obviously once the power leaves, it's back to Aang. It was Aang the whole time. It just so emulated that avatar. And so it's the same thing. Like we see, you know, like I said, with St. Paul in writing that line of it's Christ who lives in me or any of the lives of the saints.
Yeah, I could dig that. And where I would go is just saying that what I like is the emphasis that the TV show places on communion, on community, on love as the force that's going to save the world kind of thing. Not this kind of like hyper-individualized kind of like, oh, I'm going to shoulder this burden alone without the help of other people.
Oh,
and they contrast that with his.
It's a very fitting East versus West thing, right? Because so much of what we see in kind of modern Eastern culture is a response to the hyper individualism that many recognize, even people in the West, realize or at least characterize in Western kind of postmodernism.
We've gone way off the rails.
It's the seed of the word that people are recognizing, right? That the response to that hyper individualism is, you know, it's not swinging the pendulum too far the other way where we lose our identity. It's that moderate balance between the two where it's like you have an identity, but it's found or it's realized within the community. And I even put, you know, I put in parentheses when I'm kind of putting these thoughts down is his quote unquote communion or union with the other avatars or the avatars of past. That's a communion of saints. Now, again, that's me on my fixation with trying to reconcile all these things, you know, giving them a sort of Catholic flavor or Christian flavor to it.
But, I think it's true, though. I think it's real. No. It's just where it breaks down a little bit is like basically they're wrong, you know, within the context of the show. Like they don't give him necessarily good advice, it turns out. Mm. But the show doesn't treat them poorly or whatever. And it is what it is. It reflects the fact that like he does evolve into, you know, there's a better way. Now I show you a better way. Right. And it's basically the path of love.
So they're all old covenant, and then he's the, you know, you said he's a messiah figure. He's ushering in
the
new covenant
of the law. Right. Yeah.
So there you go.
Hey, we did.
So I was saying how, and this isn't just a, so this isn't just a Aang vocation story. This is a, you know, Zuko is going to, has a little bit of a vocation story, or he's recognizing or realizing a vocation. Sokka and Katara, same thing. And actually that Spirited Away episode, which I think is episode 5, they do all have to go back into their past. So Aang does, and he has that kind of healing, you know, he has that Goodwill Hunting moment. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
No, I literally, I said that to my kids.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
But then Katara feels responsible for her mother's death because she couldn't waterbend. She couldn't be the warrior that her mother needed in that moment, right? By bending the water and taking care of the firebending bad guy, right? And so then the mom puts herself in the place. It's a Harry Potter moment, right? The mom steps in to save the child. This isn't even
Avatar.
This is just everything.
It's an AI compilation
of every. Yeah, it's an AI compilation of every good like pop culture thing in the last 30 years.
That's what this is. Yeah. It's the goulash of pop culture.
That's a nice Midwestern reference for you.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
So then Sokka, you know, he has that feeling of failure, right? Where it's like he saw behind the curtain that, you know, they were sort of like, sad. Yeah. And he that moment of great shame, right? Where it's like, not only did I fail my dad, but like my dad can't even trust me to like accept the truth.
Tell me the truth. Yeah. And so
now we can kind of go back to episode 1 and see why he's overcompensating as a leader throughout that entire show, right? And has been basically since what? He's been 14 years old or however.
It seems like people are upset with the characterization of Sokka in the show because he's less comedic relief in the cartoon. He's like played for laughs. He's the yokel, like he's
which
just
like
the yucks.
Yeah, like why does that make it better? I don't know.
I get that people enjoyed that element within the cartoon, but Sokka in the TV show is a far more fleshed out from what I've seen, right? I haven't seen
seems
the
more
other
three dimensional.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems more three dimensional in the live action.
He's also quite the ladies man in this live action.
Oh yeah. He's, which I think that's consistent with the.
Oh, does that happen in the cartoon? I mean, well, I know that there's like a little bit of a thing between
for someone from the Water Nation, he's awfully thirsty. Let's just say. I had to do it. Yeah.
Man, he's every chick. He's like the Han Solo, I guess, of this. Hey, well, you know, just to bring in more pop culture stuff. Did you notice that this is basically Harry Potter, Hermione Granger, and Ron Weasley? Zuko would be Draco yeah he's, and it would fit like, really really well because he's just trying to live up to his father and he's more of a menace than he should be because he's shaped that way by his you know evil parent. This is Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. Harry Potter's great.
No, that's not an insult. It's just it's reductionistic, Jacob, is what you're saying. So now that I've kind of, we're in the last 10 minutes, basically. Now that I've gone through the, you know, how is this show so vocation-based? When I teach vocations, we go through the idea of the four temperaments. And a lot of resources that you'll use when they describe the four temperaments, they'll actually put a picture next to them. And when I would show this to my students, they'd see the pictures next to them. They're like, oh, it's just like Avatar, The Last Airbender, because the four temperaments, the first one being choleric, is described very briefly as determined, natural leader, driven, focused, and impatient. And it is the picture always next to it is the fire, right? It's the fire nation, the fire element. And it's called choleric because, I haven't described this enough, but it has its origins in Hippocrates. So if you know, think of like Hippocratic oath, it's based off of the imbalance of bodily humors. So like the fluids in the body. And that's where the ancient Greeks thought these temperaments or these personalities came from, was you had an excess of this fluid or that fluid. And it's been adopted by Christians.
It only took us like 60 episodes, but we finally got to Mike's favorite topic of body fluids. So, congratulations, Mike. We got there, bud.
Yep. This is when they put the little E next to our title of the episode for explicit. But this idea of the four temperaments has been adopted by Christian spiritual directors for, you know, basically, I mean, since the church fathers. You have church fathers, but then,
John Damascene actually talks about this, and I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I read the book, but I think he even brings this stuff up. So, like I said,
part of recognizing your vocation was looking inward, doing some introspection and realizing your temperament, because that's how you're going to better recognize what God is calling you to, is by knowing yourself better, which the know thyself line, that's from Socrates, again, ancient Greece. This would have been surrounding all of them. This would have been the cultural milieu that the early Christians would have grown up in. When it comes to so much of what we do, when it comes to like ancient stories and ancient myths and recognizing that seed of the word or the gospel, well, it would have been the same thing when it comes to these, you know, basically ancient psychology, right? Because this is what this basically is ancient psychology. So choleric, like I said, is the...
There's also where you get this whole, like, you know, like bleeding people. This idea of you know, medieval medicine, ancient medicine, like you're removing fluid from people. It's rooted in this type of idea.
Yeah, which ironically is a little bit of a materialism, interestingly. But it's just science. It's primitive science. Primitive science.
Yep.
So choleric, it was called choleric because they thought it was an excess of yellow bile. And that's what led to this, you know, very driven, focused, natural leader sort of mindset. The next, and that's, like we said, this is the Fire Nation, which you can see in Zuko, you can see in some of the other Zhao as well. The next one is phlegmatic, which, as you can imagine, is an excess of phlegm in the body. And that's known as the peacemaker, the calm, cool, tempted towards sloth or laziness, but that one is identified with water. So the Water Nation, which is maybe sometimes where you can see, oh, they thought that it fit Sokka a little bit more closely in the cartoon. But I still think that, because I was looking for this as I was watching the show, I thought that Sokka and Katara both kind of had this phlegmatic, they lived out that phlegmatic nature pretty well, which again is supposed to be reminiscent of the element of water. The next one then is melancholic, which you, as you can hear from the word, is like we'd think of melancholy, but it's an excess of black bile. And this one is identified with the thoughtful, sensitive, introspective, perfectionist, idealistic sort of mindset or personality. And so this one is associated with the Earth Nation, which again, you can think of like, you know, the very grounded, you know, heavy kind of way of thinking.
And the Bumi, the character, at least it's interesting. Yeah, in the cartoon, not so much. In the live action TV show, though, you know, he's been kind of beat down by the weighty decisions, no pun intended, that he's had to make over 100 years. And so melancholic, you know, kind of works.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the mechanist, that character, you know, too, definitely gives vibes of that as well. And then finally, you have sanguine, which you're mentioning before, the practice of bleeding people. Well, sanguine is the one with an excess of blood. So that was the one known for, which makes sense because ancient people, and rightfully so, saw the life in the blood. So if you had an excess of blood, you would have been very lively, right? And sanguine is known as an outgoing, playful, or life of the party temperament or personality. And so you can see how it's sort of fitting, right? According to each of these different fluids that go with each of them.
And you're saying the airbenders are the sanguine.
Yeah. And that's the airbender.
Which, Aang obviously is very,
very fitting, right?
Optimistic and outgoing and things like that for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, you were saying before how like the, he presents him as very childish, which, I mean, he is very young in the show, in both versions of the show, but he definitely has that airy, playful nature to him. And he keeps it even with, you know, this is why becoming the Avatar was so difficult for him, is because it was this huge responsibility for somebody that had this sanguine temperament.
No, I think that he's a happy warrior, which is a great lesson. I think the idea would be to try to like be balancing this, right? Like, and ultimately, well, that is the kind of
isn't
goal
that
of this
just the role
story,
of the
right?
Avatar? Yeah,
the Avatar is to balance the four elements, right?
So that's the thing is, you know, oftentimes it's presented as like, oh, well, what's the good one or what's the bad one? I want to be the good one. And I keep saying, or I keep trying to emphasize, there's no good temperament or bad temperament. It's, you know, like you said, balance is kind of the main thing, or it's recognizing, you know, having that practical wisdom of what is the, you know, my situation in life calling me to in terms of what is needed of me right now, what's expected of me, and how can I grow in all of them, not just for my own sake, but if I know that you are primarily melancholic, then how can I understand the melancholic temperament so I can understand you better, right?
Well, I think broadly speaking, even though these, what you're seeing here, people might scoff at the idea that we're affiliate, you know, that ancient people would affiliate these with like body fluids or something like that. There's way more logic to that than we have time to get into in this episode. But the basic idea that you've broken down, like it's kind of like a Myers-Briggs test or something like that, like a psychic survey.
It precedes it certainly, but that's what they're based off of.
People have seen the reality of like, you know, these temperaments are very dominant. You know what I mean? And even the most modern stuff, like you'll hear like Jordan Peterson talking about like the big five, right? Kind of thing. Mm. You know, we don't have time for that. And I don't remember what the big five
whole thing,
are, but like,
and his whole thing is like the Carl Jung archetypes, because that's kind of his psychological background, which again, that doesn't conflict with the four temperaments. It's just sort of like, it's looking at a different facet of the diamond sort of. And if
there's a ton of overlap there, right? Like, I mean, like, if you were to just like, you know, overlay those on top of like the big four, like the four temperaments, the big five personality.
To cite
traits.
One of our previous episodes, I mean, think of all the tricksters that we've talked about. Trickster, like in myth, which of those four do you think they typically fall under, right? Or which one does the hero typically fall under? Which one, you know, you mentioned Harry, Hermione, and Ron, and it's like, is there supposed to be a sort of synthesis, right, between those three characters and how does it kind of like move a story forward and stuff? So you can, I mean, and it's a fun thing to do. Like once you kind of have that, because that if you were writing a story, you would want this balance of personalities, this balance of characters, not just because it's more appealing to the audience, but because it creates a better story. It creates better interactions. And
well, and so I'll give Avatar a break. You know, if they stole it from Harry Potter, well, Harry Potter stole it from Star Trek. So the original Star Trek has Spock, Kirk, and McCoy, which represents this kind of trifecta of individuals. I've listened to some really interesting talks that talk about this kind of like trifecta, like the breaking the hero into like threes type thing.
Well, I'm pretty sure Aristotle said the best thing, the perfect things come in threes, right?
Yes, exactly. Go figure.
The crypto Christian Aristotle. I mean pre-Christian Aristotle.
So
I guess the, you know, kind of tying it back together, because we haven't really connected the temperaments themselves to like the vocation or the stories. We've said how the characters from each nation do typically, right, seem to epitomize one of the temperaments over the other. Now, it'd be easy to look at maybe some of the quote unquote minor characters and be like, well, look, what about Uncle Iroh, who is the Fire Nation? But he definitely doesn't seem very determined or driven or focused. He seems very playful, right? Like, is he a sanguine
he's a
Fire Nation?
By the way.
Yeah,
like favorite character in the show.
Well, and very established as the, you know, beloved, like, I mean, and if anyone's going to be like the lighthearted, like, you know, comic relief, it's kind of more him, at least in the live action one too.
Yeah.
But he also has that mentor role to Zuko, which I think we'll find, you know, is going to be very formative to his character and his development. And here we go, his realization of his vocation, Jacob. It's that. See? So
this all feels so tied together now.
Yeah. If there was some, you know, golden thread. Some strand that it was all sort of, you know, weaving around this concept. it was just convenient to use Avatar because, like I said, they already have the four elements. They already have the elements that are kind of tied in with the temperaments. And that we knew this live action was coming out. But this honestly can and should be applied to pretty much any work of fiction. Like this is something that, you know, and not just work of fiction, but like in our own lives, like when we are trying to discover our own vocation, you know, I keep saying, I say this to students too, is like, it's not like, you know, when God has a quote unquote plan for your life or a vocation for you, it's not like this regimented like list of like boxes to check. And if you miss one of those boxes or you don't check it, then, oh, sorry, you had your chance and you're never going to become the person you were meant to be. Right.
Yeah.
It's realizing a vocation is becoming more aware of all the opportunities in your life to love God and love others. And what is the specific way that God is calling you to love God and love others is going to be determined by who you are, by your temperament, by your spiritual gifts, by, you know, the stuff that makes you you. And so it's not so much, you know, trying to climb up a mountain and listen to the big booming voice. It's more looking inward and seeing what has God already given me, right? Based on my nature, based on my temperament or my personality. And then the more you are aware of that, and it ties into using Aang as our example. It's communing with the elders or communing with tradition. To go back into both of our, you know, backgrounds as Catholic and Orthodox, we're all about communing with the tradition, with the saints of the past to help us realize who we are. I mean, sure.
Well, and one of the things that it got me thinking of was the conversation between Princess Yui and Sokka at the end. You know, like he has a moment of catharsis where he's like, I have always supposed to be this strong warrior guy because, my, you know, I disappointed my dad and things like that. And, you know, Princess Yui, who's a character we didn't really talk about, but she's like, you know, the love and compassion that you feel inside makes you this kind of, right? Mm. And so that kind of speaks to a lot of what you're talking about, how like the shape, the temperament that we are is never in opposition to God's plan for us, right? So...
it's the unexpected battle, right? Because nobody expected the Messiah to win the battle against the enemies by dying on the cross, but it was the cruciform warrior, right? The cruciform image that actually won the battle. And in her case, right? Because she was the one who gave her life to become the moon at the, last. So it's like,
don't ask.
I know we haven't, I mean, but the point at least, and like I said, if you have seen it, if you haven't seen it, but the point is, right, that is the self-sacrificial, like she was realizing her vocation.
Yep.
And it wasn't just a, I'm doing my duty. It was a, this is the way that I'm called to love.
Yeah. Right? Well, and it's like, and this is who I am. Like was it from birth even, or maybe it was just from like really, really young age.
So
but
again,
like I'm
it's a vocation thing, Jacob. Yeah. It's like,
I know exactly. It's like, this is who I am.
Every single character. And she only shows up in like the last episode and yet she speaks to that same theme. So it's not even me saying, oh, I love this show so much. Like I liked it. I enjoyed it. Like we both said, it was entertaining.
I thought it was, I think it's pretty interesting. I'm going to give this a solid, like, you know, 8 out of 10. Because,
well, and I don't care about that. I don't care about numbers, but
to give the audience a sense of how I felt about this show. Well, I mean, I know I've kind of poked fun at it throughout this conversation, but
it's so derivative. Yeah,
as a family entertainment, that's no. I'm just saying that it's rich. It's rich with
no, and that's the thing is to the degree that it picks up on and these are themes that like every Christian can resonate with. This isn't like a, well, you got to plug your nose at this part because it's super Buddhist or it's super, you know, it's not, it's like, these are all things that every, like, these are Christian ideas. These are seeds of the word, right? This is what we've always been trying to do with all this stuff. And you can even find them, you know, planted in Avatar: The Last Airbender, even the Netflix one, Jacob.
Even the live action Netflix.
And pretty, you know, besides
where they go next.
Besides asking everyone to, of course, like and subscribe and, you know, blah, 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 all that stuff. We'd like to, you know, we love making this sort of thing. But, you know, the only way to end the show properly, Jacob, you know what that is?
Oh, go ahead. What is
my cabbages!
Thanks for listening to Voyage Podcast. The Voyage Podcast is a production of Voyage Comics and Publishing, which seeks to create exceptional entertainment informed by Catholic values that inspire people to live a heroic life. Voyage Comics seeks to advance truth and beauty found in powerful stories. To learn more, visit voyagecomics.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.